Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda, and I've got a fun guest in store for you today. I have Heather Freeche with me, and Heather is the CEO and product developer of the Spearhead Group. Heather's career spans more than 20 years, and in that course has earned numerous distinctions working with some of the world's best-known Fortune 100 companies and brands. Heather has not only helped to reimagine the physical aspects of countless products across multiple market sectors, but she has also made it her commitment to be a pioneer for women-owned businesses and a leader in sustainable packaging. It is my pleasure to welcome Heather to our show today.
Thanks for having me, Belinda.
Absolutely. So, gosh, I just love that. I can't wait to dive in and hear more about that, especially about the sustainable packaging. That's such a big deal today. Why don't you just take us down that journey a little bit, fill us in on some of the gaps of this bio, and tell us how you kind of became in this position of CEO at Spearhead.
Well, it's been a journey and a half, I would say. The short version of the story is that I took the first job I was offered after college and was good at it and kept getting promoted a little bit. And I stayed at one company for 20 years, and that went until 2017. And I think at that point I had really found my groove in knowing what I wanted to do and knowing what was really important to me. And working for someone else made that a little bit more difficult. So that's why I decided, you know, if you have to bet on somebody, the safest bet is to bet on yourself. So that's what we did.
That's awesome. So you worked there for, just in the, some of this backstory, you worked there for almost 20 years, though, raised your family. And so That was great. And then you made this decision to start your own company. And you do that with your husband?
I do. Yep. So we're both co-founders, but I'm the primary owner and we're WeBank certified women owned.
Oh, that is fantastic. So tell us a little bit about what you do today in your role at, or what Spearhead does for especially other female business owners and such.
So the Spearhead Group, essentially, to make it short, because I know it's not really the priority of this conversation, is we help brands, mostly spirits brands, but to create the most unique and high profile packaging they can make. We do everything from bottles to closures to cartons, and we try to do it with the most sustainability, the most affordable pricing, and the best customer service. The journey to becoming a woman CEO was essentially just the choice that my husband had been my boss for the last 20 years, and it seemed like it was fair to have a change. So that's what we did. And then supporting other women-owned businesses. I mean, the WeBank network is so incredibly supportive and powerful. And a lot of times I find, you know, women go out of their way to support other women. And so whenever we can kind of go out of our way to support other women-owned businesses, we choose to do it. So it's one of Spearhead's core values that we actually support every employee in choosing a personal mission to support with their time and their effort. And WeBank is the priority for two of us. It's for myself and my colleague, Jessica. So now she's on WeBank Next Generation Committees. I have people from clients who are like, hey, can you help me find a woman-owned business that supplies XYZ? And so we tap the network to see if we can find them a woman-owned business who can help them. And I just love being a part of it.
Oh, that is exciting. With your level of expertise, what are three tips that you can give me? And maybe it's in leadership. Maybe that is the level of expertise here. As you've worked and managed a group of people and now in heading up Spearhead. So let's talk about maybe that, your three tips that you have for leadership.
Oh my goodness. Well, so I hate to say this, but I'm going to. I'm proud of my leadership skills, and it's because they are very hard won, because God knows I was bad at it when I was younger. I was very lucky that I was given a lot of resources and training to get better at it. But I mean, everything you could do wrong in management, I did it already. Number one, servant leadership is the only way. So without a doubt, the number one foundation of everything is you have to look at everyone on your team as someone that you can help grow. And if you treat them that way and you look at them that way, they are much more likely to succeed because you're always there to help them. So we're actually in the middle of quarterly review season at the Spearhead Group. And one of the most important questions in quarterly review season is, what more can I give you? What more do you need from me? And I say that to my employees because I need to make sure they have the resources, the training, the education, the technology, whatever it is. They need those resources to succeed. And the only place they can get them is from me. So I never look at an employee as someone I need to demand something from. It's someone I need to support to achieve the best. My number two is, as an entrepreneur and as a business owner, this is actually something from Gary Vaynerchuk, which I heard by way of Heather Monahan, actually. But the idea of it is your employees will never care about your business as much as you do, because it's your business. And so you can never look at an employee and expect more from them than you would do yourself. So if you have already gone home for the night and you are already having dinner, you cannot be upset if your employee has also done that and is not still at work. So you have to support your employees to do the best they can within the parameters of where they are, but you can't ever act disappointed in an employee for not working 24 hours a day, which I know a lot of bosses do, actually. I had a boss like that too, who used to say you have to be the last person who leaves the office because you can't expect your other employees to do it if you don't. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I've heard that, and I think it's kind of ridiculous, but
it's
yes.
A little bit ridiculous. I mean, especially yeah. Now. You remember, you know, back right. In the old days, you were judged by how many hours a day you were in the office, as if when you left, you didn't work. And
exactly.
Now, that's all gone. And then my third on leadership is that it's really important to take the reins of your business. You can't let the market or the currents take your business wherever it wants to go. So again, Heather Monahan, I'm always plugging her because she's amazing. She has this thing. She says, you're only afraid of things that are possible for you, but that fear is a liar. Fear is something that you have inside you that will hold you back from going after something that, you know, inside, maybe in the back of your mind, you feel like it's a risk. But in reality, if you're afraid of it, it's because you've already acknowledged that it's possible. And my analogy I use for this is, I was afraid of starting a business, but I was not afraid of becoming an astronaut and going into space. And that's the difference. I'm not afraid of that because it's not going to happen. But starting a business, well, yeah, it's scary, but it's scary because it's possible. So as long as you keep that in mind and you kind of keep pushing yourself to move your business forward, I think you'll be okay.
That is great advice for sure. Awesome. So how has the business now? So you were an employee for many years, but obviously heading up many projects and like you said, you continued to grow within that company, but now you own the company. How has that changed your lifestyle, if any, in these last few years?
Well, it's funny. It changed my lifestyle, but not in the way I expected. So I expected to be afraid all the time because
okay.
You know that whole thing about entrepreneurs, you know, and you lay awake at night staring at the ceiling, wondering how you're going to pay the bills. And I won't deny there was time spent like that. But it's really, really changed because I've realized, you know, if I ever go through a phase where there's, you know, fear or money problems, I just have to go make more money. And I know I can. And so I've realized that I actually don't have anything to be afraid of. So my calmness and my sense of inner peace has gotten to be tremendous because I'm not relying on anyone else's decisions or anyone else's marketing or anyone else's new business outreach. I'm in charge of all of it. And because I've done it once, I don't have to be afraid of doing it again. And so I think that's what's really created my happy place, is because the only person I'm really dependent on is myself.
That is great. It's funny how you said it wasn't what you expected. And I think that is, there's expectations out there about entrepreneurship that are either, you know, sort of misconstrued, or one person thinks that it's different across the board. So you can't really say what the expectation is, because one person expects something completely different. For some people, they'll talk to me and they're like, I like to be able to pick up and work anywhere. You could do that if you chose to. And I would be like, yeah, but I really like being here in my home office. And I like the stability, and I like coming down even in the middle of the day right now when it's nice, and go sitting out on my porch for just a few minutes and taking that in. I don't need to be in Italy or Costa Rica or somewhere else. And a lot of people think that's the bomb diggity, is that you don't have to be in one place. And yet for me and my expectation, I love it that I get to be in my own space and I get to do what I want to do. It's just funny. Different people have different expectations of what being an entrepreneur is. And then it's like, does your experience actually meet up with those expectations? I think.
Absolutely.
It's interesting.
And you can't predict it before you've done it. I'm telling you what, TV and movies, it's not true. It is not true. Shark Tank, it's not true.
I know, right? Absolutely. I love the one thing you said, though, because for me, that's always been the case. I've been an entrepreneur pretty much in the majority of my adult life. And people always say, oh my gosh, like there's no, you know, security or whatever. And I just think there's all the security in the world. I get to make is the money when I want to make the money. And at the very beginning of COVID, like for me, that's always been, and just book more speaking engagements or go out and meet more people. And when that was gone during COVID, it set me back for a minute, and that fear set in. But then I was like, okay, find a different way to bring the money in. And then you just go after that. Like there's always a way if you are, I don't know, is it confident? What is it? Is if you've done it before, I like how you said, if you've done it before, then you know you can do it again, even if you have to tweak it or make it slightly different. But what would you say, where's that confidence piece come from? Because people ask me that. How do you know, or where do you get that?
You know, it's really hard. Well, first, okay, so there's two things I would say about that. The first thing is that if you've done it before, you can do it again. Yeah. So I was lucky. I was actually, when I worked for 20 years for someone else, I was very fortunate that I was given pretty much free rein. So even though it was another person's company, I was running sort of, in a way, I was running my own business in that company. So with no financial risk whatsoever, I was able to figure out my best way of working. And I succeeded. And so that's why I knew when I started Spearhead, okay, I can do this because I've done it before with someone else's money. The only difference is it's mine. And then from beyond that, now I've done it with my own money. I've learned how to do, you know, all the finance. I've learned banking relationships. I've learned those different things. So I've done it before. I can do it again. The other thing is that there's the power of what you tell yourself. And they've done studies about this. And the human brain actually, this is baffling to me, but the human brain can't tell the difference between a lie and the truth. It just knows what it's been told and it treats it all the same way. So if your self-talk is very much, this is scary, I don't know what I'm doing, this is too risky, what am I doing, I'm being irresponsible. Like if you have that self-talk in your head, your brain will believe it and your life will kind of follow that way because you're setting it up. If you tell yourself, this is a challenge, but I'm good at meeting challenges, or this is difficult and there's things I need to learn, that's a much more positive way of saying pretty much the same thing, but then you get yourself over the hump and you break it into little parts and okay, I need to learn about this. Let me go learn about it and then I can do it.
That is so true. I really do. And I think that's a really, really great example of that. It's self-talk is so important. And I love that, the way you said the brain doesn't know the difference between a lie and the truth. And it's so true. So what you feed yourself on a constant basis is going to end up becoming your reality. And exactly. People don't understand how that happens, but it is the way you respond to it. It's the way others respond to you. There's a whole lot within that realm of that equation. So let's talk about outstanding accomplishments. Is there been one that has been like, wow, like your wow moment, like, oh, I can't believe we got this client, or I can't believe we took this from here to here, or you were, maybe it's a certain award or distinction that you've been given, but was there a moment that you were like, wow, this is awesome?
Can I do two?
You sure can.
All right.
I love this part of the show. Sometimes people, they don't tell any, and they just kind of, very philosophical about it. It's like more of a feeling or whatever. I'm like, no, I'm looking for that moment, you know, when you went, wow. And everybody, whether they want to admit it out loud or not, there's a moment in your life and you went like, wow, I have made it. And then what's funny, and it's hard, I think, is then 10 years later, you did something else and then you felt that, you know what I mean? But there's always those moments that you remember, like that was the it.
I know. So my first one was at the WeBank National Convention in 2018. And so, you know, the WeBank, it's the Women-Owned Business Network. The national organization met in Baltimore, and they did, I think for the first time or one of the first times, they did a pitch competition. And I had not known about it in advance, and I didn't prepare. But I was like, you know, the conference is about 3 days long. And mm-hmm. So they said, okay, here's how the pitch competition works. First round, 80 contestants, you do a 90-second pitch. And the hard part about it was you're not allowed to hold anything. So you can't have note cards and you can't have a prop. And I'm a company that makes products. So this was not easy. So you get 90 seconds. Then they narrow the 80 down to 20 and you get a 2 minutes. And then they narrow the 20 down to 4. And then the 4 presents at the big dinner of all 4,000 attendees on the big stage with the microphone, with all the lights, like in the big, like grand, whatever ballroom with like 4,000 people there. And I hadn't planned on entering, but to make a long story short, I got to the final 4. And I have to tell you, I was doing my 3-minute pitch, and it was sponsored by Pepsi. And the prize was $20,000 and a year of mentorship by Pepsi.
Wow.
Would have been incredible, absolutely incredible to win. I didn't win. But being one of the top 4, I have to tell you, I held the microphone and I did my presentation. I had my employees in the audience who were like practically crying, you know, because we'd started in this tiny little one room office. And now here I was with 4,000 people standing up and clapping after I finished. And I was just like, oh my God, if I can stand up in front of 4,000 people and not die, then I can do anything. But then to see, you know, my team members there who were like so caught up in being part of this exciting thing, I was like, oh my God, I've made it. That's what I felt.
That is so cool. What did you present, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, I was just presenting about Spearhead and how we do what we do. And I had a little gimmick, because the whole thing about Spearhead is we don't approach anything from a marketing perspective. So I'll never tell anyone how to do their branding to make it look better. But I look at how do bottling lines work? How do label applications work? How does it work if you need to have, you know, workers on a line putting things together manually versus if you have, you know,
automation.
The Vernon Shirley introduction, remember, with all the bottles?
I do.
You know, what do you do if you have that? So that's what I do. I stand on production lines. So I was wearing this very cute Ralph Lauren dress, but I put on my steel toe boots. And I was talking about Spearhead and how we're there every step of the way and how the manufacturing works. And so we're not only boardroom, but we're also manufacturing plant. And so I think it was just cute having the steel toes. And I think people liked it sort of as like a little hook thing. So
yep.
It worked. It worked out.
Oh, that's all awesome. And you had another one?
I did. So our biggest customer is, it's a company that's the largest spirits company in the world. And they have brands like Crown Royal and Tanqueray and Captain Morgan's. And so what we're sort of known for is we make all the purple bags for Crown Royal. So
we have, you know what we use those for? Microphone covers.
Microphone covers. I actually just learned jazz musicians use them as covers on trumpets because it makes the sound smoother. Just learned that this week. So Diageo is the name of the company. They do supplier awards every year. And so in 2020, we won the Supplier Excellence in Diversity Supplier, but also we were nominated for Supplier of the Year. And usually Supplier of the Year, like, you'd have to be a bigger company than mine. So to get nominated, there's actually a screenshot of it because we were on Zoom and there was a presenter sort of, you know, left side of the screen. And then on the right side of the screen is my face kind of mouth open, like, what just happened here?
Wow.
But that one, I mean, after that one, I'll be honest, my whole team got together. It was COVID. So it was December. And we went to my house and we stood out on my deck in winter coats with a bottle of champagne because we were so excited.
Oh, that's an awesome story. Thank you. I love hearing stories because that's the moments, you know, when you work really hard and then you have those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, this was incredible. And it's just a recognition of your work and your in just everything. So that is amazing. All right. So then let's talk about a challenge. Do you have a same equal kind of a story, a big challenge, and then how you worked through it?
That's actually a good one. I'm a little bit stumped here on that. I think maybe that's what I'll say is that, you know what, every day sort of has its own challenges. Every day, either it's hiring or it's staffing or it's finance. That's the one I'm going to do. Finance. So funding a startup business is a miserable, terrible thing because what I always say is Shark Tank is a lie, right? So you get these companies coming out and they're so excited and they've got their displays and they're like, I want $400,000 for like 9% of my business. And then there's these sharks who are like, well, maybe not 9%, maybe 15%. So look, my experience was completely different. And I couldn't find, when I was trying to start Spearhead, anyone who wanted to invest for less than 51% of our company. Wow. And I had ridiculous offers. I mean, I had one guy who was like, I'll give you $200,000 to start a business, but I want 51%. What? Well, if I want 51%, I'll just stay working for someone else and I don't need your money, you know?
Like, exactly.
It was crazy. But then you go to banks and even the SBA, the Small Business Association, you can't get money unless you've been in business for 2 years. So
right.
You have to figure it out. How are you going to keep yourself afloat? Then, you know, there's what I understand is, you know, 96% of venture capital money goes to men. 4% goes to women. Heaven help you if you're a woman in her late 40s. So yeah, funding and financing has definitely been the challenge. And we were really, really lucky that we stayed true to sort of who we are. And we found a local small town bank. Talk about working from your happy place. Local, not like a super small bank, but, you know, not one of the big mm-hmm. banks. And they started out with giving us a little bit of credit and then a little bit more and then a little bit more and a little bit more. And now, you know, we're into, you know, 7 figures of credit with a local bank because we grew together. And I don't think there's anything that would make me change because they were there for us in the beginning. And I have to laugh. There's all these other, you know, banks and lending associations and things that want to reach out now.
Yep.
Nope.
It's funny. I had a very similar when I first started my business, and it wasn't. We needed just a line of credit just to operate on. And it was very, very hard. But I also, this was crazy back then because now it's so different, but we needed a merchant account, like to be able to run, you know, credit cards in our office. And let me tell you, getting one of those was equally as hard without them wanting to charge you like this astronomical percentage point. And it was this local bank. And I remember, and it was a smaller bank, and the actual president of the bank came out to my little home office, which was at that time just nothing. And I pitched myself and said what I was doing. And she goes, you know what? We're gonna take a risk with you. You seem like you really have a lot of passion for what you're doing, and I believe in it. And it was the same thing. We started out with this small line of credit, and my merchant account at like a super reasonable rate. And I never forgot that ever. Like,
absolutely. And you don't forget that. The people who support you in the beginning, you don't forget it ever.
That's right. All right. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
So I have achieved it, I think, you know, and, you know, nothing gold can stay. But as of right now, the spot that I'm in is absolute perfection for me. So I am in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, right on the Delaware River. It's a beautiful little town. And it is the town in which I live and the town in which I work. So my commute is 4 miles. The other day I had to stop and wait because there were 30 geese crossing the road and you can't hurry them along when they need to go. My kids go to the local public high school. They're both interning for me this summer. So my kids are here. We have lunch together. Sometimes, you know, during the school year when they go back, you know, they might come over after school and do their homework in the office when I'm here. Or, you know, with everything terrible about last year, I will say I got to work from home with my kids. You know, sometimes I was in the office, sometimes I was home. But I have found that perfect balance of being able to live and work in a local community. And I don't have, you know, stresses of commuting or, you know, stresses of office politics or anything like that. We have a picnic table in the back of our office. We had a goose who laid eggs and we had a duck that laid eggs. And so in the spring we had lunch outside and we watched to see, do we have babies yet? You know, this is how we're living our life. And I absolutely love it.
Oh, that is wonderful. So what advice would you give? You've given some really great nuggets of advice, but for someone wanting to start their own business and has this dream or this following, you know, desire to either leave a full-time job or just follow a passion of theirs into entrepreneurship.
So the number one thing I would say is you have to look at your personal finances and see how much money you can gamble. And if it goes away and you get nothing for it, you're still okay. And that is the number you have to play with. And then you figure it out. So it is tempting and easy to overspend because you keep thinking to yourself, one more month, one more month, one more month, you know? But you can't do that. And so I had done it. I'm sort of a fatalistic kind of person. I was like, okay, we have this much money. It's possible this won't work. It will not go a dollar over that much money. And if we lose it all, I'm going to be okay with it. I'm not going to be mad. I'm just going to get my resume together and get a job. And that's probably the number one thing, because for all the months that it took us to reach that number, I didn't worry about it because I haven't reached that number. You know what I mean? Like it was fine. That's probably my number one. The second one I would say is don't do what we did, in that if you really want to go after something, you really should do some digging around and make sure there's, you know, what they call product market fit. Make sure there's someone out there who wants what you're doing. So my husband and I were very careful to not speak to any potential clients before we quit our job because it was A, unethical, and we just didn't really want to chance it with someone saying, you know, were you working here and trying to steal my clients?
Sure.
So we didn't ask. So we crossed our fingers and we figured, okay, look, there's people who like us. There's people who know that we're good at what we do. There's people who would recommend us, because that old business, you know, we were doing something pretty similar to what we were doing here. But we didn't ask. I would say in hindsight, if I were going to go out again, I might pick up the phone and say, I'm trying to start a business to do X, Y, Z. Do you think you'd be interested in that? Do you think I'd be good at that? Do you think you would switch business to me from your current supplier, regardless of what it is? Or, you know, even if, you know, you're starting a side hustle, if you want to, you know, start a, you know, candle brand or cosmetics brand, you know, would you carry my products in your stores? Look at this branding. Does this look nice to you before you decide to really go all in?
Yeah, that is great advice. It's kind of having the even little focus groups, you know, just to say, hey, it's like even with courses, is this a course you would buy? Is this something you'd be interested in learning about?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, we do that with our...
You're willing to get. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been really, really a fun interview. And Heather, what are some new and exciting things maybe that you're working on that you think our listeners would be interested about? And then please make sure that you let everybody know where they can find more information about you and your business?
Well, a lot of what I'm working on is sort of a little bit top secret, and I'm not really allowed to say.
Okay.
But I would say, you know, we here are all about sustainability. So I would tell everybody, whenever possible, please recycle paper, plastic, and glass. Make sure that you do that. We're doing our part to try to find a way to tell our clients to use less of all of those things. We're, I think, a little bit unusual in the sense that people come to us for elaborate packaging, and we always try to find a way to tell them how to do it with less material, which actually sort of reduces our revenue, but we feel like it's the right thing to do, right? So brands want these wonderful, beautiful things, and we try to find a way to tell them how to reduce their material usage by, you know, 20, 30, 40% if they can. So please reduce, reuse, recycle. That's my biggest advice. You can find us at thespearheadgroup.com. And I think that's probably what I would say about that.
Do you know what? I love this. So let's dive into this. I was going to end the interview right here. But so I had a fella on my podcast, and he was really into it more from a corporate standpoint. So I was saying, what can the average person do to create more sustainability within just their everyday lives? And he just kept going back to only support brands that do this. Do you know what I mean? He kept looking at it from the corporate lens, and I had three shots of giving it to him. I couldn't get that. So now that you're saying that, I know there's a lot of people that want to, they're thinking about it and they'd want to do more of that, but maybe just don't know exactly like where can I make those little steps? What are some of the little things I can do to make a difference? If you'd like to share that, I think that would be amazing, because we didn't really get that answer on that particular podcast.
So it's so funny that you say that to me, because I actually would quite agree with the other guy who was on your podcast, in that I think it's actually misleading to let the average American citizen think that they're going to make a huge impact when corporations aren't doing their fair share to make their huge impact.
Right.
But again, all people should do what they can. So here's the thing. One, we all know how to drink water out of a glass. When we were kids and our parents' generation, you could drink water out of a glass. You do not need a plastic bottle. Second, recycle your plastic bottles. Third, don't buy black plastic. What a lot of people don't know, everyone I tell this to is baffled, but black plastic isn't recyclable. So don't buy it. I literally have made different choices in the restaurants I get takeout from, because some of them use the black bottom takeout containers, and all that is garbage. You can't recycle black plastic. Recycle all your paper, laundry detergent, body washes, dish soap. Those things are 90% water. There is no reason to buy a product in a plastic container that's 90% water. For all of those products, there is a sustainable option. Laundry detergent, you can buy dehydrated sheets. You can buy the pods. Sheets are more sustainable than pods. No one needs fabric softener sheets. You can get wool dryer balls to go in there, and they absorb moisture and they're not disposable. And I'm going to throw this in like at the very end of the podcast, but I actually last year started a second business for waterless body wash, because body wash is also 90% water. So you're transporting all that water through the supply chain unnecessarily and then capturing it in plastic. The other thing is most people don't put their bathroom plastic in their recycling, because we're inherently lazy. And so there's a trash can in the bathroom, and there's usually a trash and a recycling bin in the kitchen. And it looks like people just don't carry the recycling from the bathroom to the kitchen. They just throw it in the trash in the bathroom. So if you can find a sustainable body wash brand, ubodycare.com is mine. But, you know, soap, bar of soap is fine. That's what I would say. So look for ways to save water and use concentrated things, because water not only makes things have to be packaged in plastic, but it really weighs on the transportation system. You're just moving more stuff than you have to.
Right, right. Gosh,
sorry, those are passionate about that. I went on for a bit. Sorry about that.
No, I love it. I love it. And he was really great at saying what you're saying. Don't support brands that that don't support sustainability. It's basically, and he gave some really great examples of that. But he definitely was looking at it through that corporate lens. But you are right. Even in, like, I didn't know that about the black plastic. And there are lots of people that have, you know, takeout. I've even quit doing takeout as much. It's like, sometimes it's like, how much of that am I really going to go home and eat? Probably not.
I felt it was so conflicting for me because I've been a sustainability nut for sort of a long time. And then COVID hit and everything was support your local restaurants. So I've already spoken about how I love sort of being in this local community. Well, I didn't want to not support the restaurants, but I used to feed my family of four and come home with a tote of, you know, either styrofoam or plastic or whatever. And I didn't want it, but I didn't want to not support the restaurants.
Yeah.
While, you know, the economy was so bad. It was really tough.
I bet. Wow. Well, this has been awesome, Heather. Thank you so much. And congratulations on your success. And
oh, thank you.
Yes. And I love it. We need more women supporting women. And can you say the name of the organization again? Did you say it was We Network?
It's We Bank, WEENC.
Oh,
and it's
okay.
The Women's Business Enterprise National Council, but just Google WeBank, WBENC.
Okay.
And essentially, it's a certification body, and they audit businesses because many, many moons ago, what would happen would be a guy would try to say his wife was running the business so they could possibly capture some kind of like diverse supplier spend. And so this WeBank National Committee was created so you get audited. So they come in, you have to show that you're signing, the woman is signing contracts as the CEO. Let me see canceled checks. Who's paying the bills?
And oh, wow.
So it documents and proves that it's true that the woman really is running the business. They audit you. I remember them asking questions. If you had a financial decision to make, who can make it in your absence? And I was like, nobody. And they were like, check. So yeah, that's what they do.
Oh, that is great. And then they support other women in business. So it's like a network of...
It's a network. So we refer to each other. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Love that. So that was neat.
You WeBank certified. You should call
me. I know. I know. I'm sitting here thinking, all right, this is the new thing for me today.
You should
Yeah. So thanks, Heather, for being with us and sharing your wisdom and knowledge and just... in imparting that to our audience. We appreciate it.
And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes. All right, everyone. That is a wrap today. And thank you so much for joining us on Work From Your Happy Place. Don't forget to subscribe. It is the best way that you don't miss out on a single interview. Rate and review is always appreciated. But the biggest form of compliment is to refer us to a friend. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends, and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.